You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
Now recording.
Hi everyone, welcome to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com. It seems that those days me and Gaia are recording almost a daily episode. So, it's a new day, so you get the right to have a new episode. So welcome everyone. Fakeologist.com, I am Garris from Geneva, Switzerland, and as always, or even almost as always, I am with Gaia from Bogota, Colombia. Hi.
Hello. Hello, Garris. Hello, everybody. Yes, it's 11:14 here in the morning. And actually, I would like to talk about one thing. I didn't talk in much detail. We didn't have the time. We had 10.5 hours of chat already in the FRAC 13 and 13B about the paper rockets, about the Apollo program, but especially the geology or the selenology, the lunar geology, is very interesting, and I looked at that in detail. And I have a PowerPoint presentation, and we're going to spend about 30 minutes on each slide, so we will have a marathon session of close to 66 hours, I think. We will make it a bit shorter. But I would like to go to over a couple of points.
To be honest, I don't think that we will really see the end of it. I think that maybe in 10 years we will still be recording things on the moon travel.
That could be. Well, in the meantime, while we are speaking for about 30 seconds or more, I can finally, we have to play something that we couldn't last time, that didn't work, but now it works. And it is the proof we talked about. Yeah, Garris, you summarized.
Yes, everything is on... Everything that you want to know about the other show that we recorded, anything new, anything special, is all on the Fakeopedia page. Everything is on the Fakeopedia page. So what we are about to listen is not the state of mind of someone that is making space travel, let's say. But I will leave you the surprise of discovering what the clip will be.
As it will start to play. It is Apollo 16. That's important. Apollo 16.
Yes.
These guys are talking about, allegedly. Apollo 16.
Yes, allegedly.
Astronauts on the moon. And they're behaving, interestingly, I would say.
Yes.
There's something to say.
Not really according to what we could expect of someone that is on the moon.
And listen what they have to say and what they are. And it's very, very clear what we can conclude from this.
Yes. Yes, it doesn't take much to discern what is the problem in that audio clip that will start any second now.
I was strolling on the moon one day in a very early month of December. May, when the much...
What about this?
This is in the month of May. No, December. Yeah. December. No, May.
Yeah.
Nice fellow having fun. I mean, if I were to be driving a car and if you were to speak with me, I will probably be at pain to answer you with such calm and no tension on the voice.
I mean, this song, the only word that makes sense is May because it rhymes. December doesn't make sense. But we are talking about Apollo 16. December has to refer to December 1971. Because 72, you know, in 1972, there was Apollo 16, allegedly. So, if they say May, and then they say December, and then go back to May. So, December is what one guy says. December is the month they recorded this, they filmed this, because they, this astronaut is speaking like in the present. No, but this will be broadcast in May, right? But this is the idea. But wait a minute, it gets funnier. Wait a minute, because Apollo 16 was not in May; it was in April. So it was earlier than the planned day. They didn't know in December 1971 that Apollo 16 wouldn't take place in May. It was planned for May, and it was taking place end of April. They landed before the 1st of May back on Earth. So, right? So they prove here when they fake this. In December 1971, they faked the Apollo 16 footage. They planned for May 1972, but actually so-called did in April 1972.
Yes. It's funny that no one took the time to re-record or re-edit or do anything. They really thought that the public will not
This is 1989 for all mankind, the documentary. Okay. That was my wake-up call to everything. That is how I woke up. Apollo was the first thing, and that was the documentary. This is the documentary, and watch it. And this is what I found just in the days before the frack. So not in the research of years ago, so it was just recent. But what I would like to talk about is about the other stuff I did years ago, because there are some interesting things. And the thing is, there are people who have said things that are better.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the fakeology.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
In my dream, I have a since when do we get at the 20-minute mark also the begging for money bumper? I thought it was only the hour one, but okay. Let's listen to someone who has said things very wisely, I would say.
If liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear.
Yes. It's not, like I said, it's not that they don't want to hear. They can't hear it at this point. It will create a mental schism for some people to start to consider reality for what it is.
Yes.
At least that's what I think. I think that it can be generate anguish and fear and general sensation of uneasiness, let's say, to start to discover the truth and what is really going on behind the scene. So sometimes it's possible that people put mental blockade between them and the truth.
Yes. The thing what I wanted to talk about, and let's cut to the chase immediately, that's the easiest and the best thing. I will give a little bit of background. The history of the moon, as it's presented in the mainstream hypothesis, is that there was a collision early in the formation of the solar system when the Earth collided with a Mars-sized planet, and from that chunk was broken off, and that became the moon. That happened in the first 100 million years or so. So it was very, very quickly compared to the... So the moon is already a separate object with all the processes that go on for 4.5 billion years. That is the story. What happened was there was some... Yes, just... give me a sec. Volcanism and on the moon, and they had the formation of crust, the cooling, after the impact to the surface and also the Earth. Back then it was like completely lava, like a molten rock and so. According to the hypothesis of the time, right? We have hardly any rocks from that time, so it's just, it's very speculative. But okay, this is the model they use. So, and then, much later, you had Falconism. But yeah, go on, Gerrish.
Yes, if I can give you an alternative historian of the moon, that of course is not that I endorse it or whatever, but I have the chance to read a small book, pretty small book, that was edited in a collection by the French magazine Paris Match. And during the 70s and 80s, Paris Match published a series of books about alternative history, let's say conspiracy theories, but without calling it conspiracy theory per se. So I did read a book where this guy was claiming that the moon is something that we had a different moon at different time of humanity, and that the thing is that the moon tend to lower her orbit than hitting the Earth, and it's a cycle that is starting all over again, like every 800 years or so, the guy was claiming, I think.
800 years? Did the every
no, 8,000, I'm sorry, 8,000.
Every 8,000 years, the moon is hitting the Earth.
Yes, that was the theory. Just wanted to mention it, because that is the only alternate history of the moon that I ever hear about.
That should leave quite a mark in the recent geological past, I would say.
Yes, and where is the new moon coming from?
Record. I don't know. But there's another theory, and it is that the moon is a body that is captured in the orbit of the Earth, that there was no collision, and that the moon was another planet or so, and it was captured by Earth's gravity, and that is how it became the moon, because the moon is very big. That is for sure, right?
Yes, for the satellite of a planet such as Earth, it's pretty big.
Yes. That is quite strange, and so people have come up with ideas to answer that. The thing is, so they made maps of the moon, geological maps of the moon, before Apollo. So what they just did is, using telescopes and using light filters and so on, and analysis of chromatography and so on with light, you can at least make out a couple of elements or certain wavelengths of light have certain properties and so on. So they make a rough model of the moon, of the geology of the moon, and that makes sense. That's what any geologist would do. Wherever you go on Earth, you make first a rough idea what you were going to expect there, and then when you go there, you find something which is similar, it's never the same what you
would expect. Shall ask, how many times did a geologist create a model that revealed to be perfectly exact to the point? You know?
Never.
How many times did that happen?
By definition, that's impossible, because we will never know. We only have a couple of boreholes, and that's it, right? I mean, all the rest in between is completely unknown. Well, it's not completely unknown. You have seismic, and you have... I mean, there is... you can say something, otherwise you couldn't have any exploration for also ore bodies, same thing. By definition, and that is the knowledge that every geologist had, and that is also why they oppose this "the science is settled" bullshit, because that is geology is never settled, because it's impossible to know what the history of the Earth is, because we only have a couple of clues, and we have to make something out of that, right? There's no there's just too much lost, right? But on the moon, the moon is actually pretty okay, because you can see her all the time, at least full moon. So you can study her.
Yes.
You have a view, and that you can, from here, you can study Australia or Namibia or wherever, right? So what they did was making a geological map of the moon and of the landing sites they selected. And one of these, Apollo 15, it turned into a geological model of the moon that doesn't exist, like I said. I mean, I made the only model ever of the moon like that. It's impossible, because if we would have been there, there would be thousands of these models. So, but in that process, I found a couple of very interesting things I would like to mention a bit more. So I just used all these data, all these maps, and these maps, and that's the thing, you can still find them on the NASA website, and they're not updated. They're from 1968. So they're not geological maps from the moon. No, they're maps made from Earth and with an idea of what the moon would look like a provisional, preliminary, before doing the fieldwork map, not the final map. You would have a map.
Yes.
Where you have a rough sketch, and then you have a higher detail in the area you visited, and you can extrapolate, and then you update your model. That's how it works, the geological fieldwork. But the first geologist only joined on the last mission, so it is also very strange. But what I want to say is, if my laptop starts working, it's actually breaking up, so maybe I will...
Yes, it seems that each and every model that the NASA created about the moon surface revealed to be perfectly accurate and exact.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they... just looked the rocks, what they mapped there, they looked up those rocks on Earth, and they passed them off as moon rocks. That is what they did.
Yes.
And so the final conclusion was, yeah, hey, we expected it like this, and it turned out like exactly like this. That
yes.
is impossible.
A first
that
case in geology.
Yeah, I mean, that is, like I said, going to London and making a rough idea of where every shop is, and you have a bit of Google Earth, and that's it. And then London is exactly how you expected it to be. No, that is not going to happen, right? So, So what they did was before also they measured the magnetic field, and I don't know if it's measured or if it's based on so-called satellite data or whatever. I mean, there are things you can do from Earth, and there are things they claim they have done with satellites around the moon. So it's not really clear where the data is coming from. I mean, I've used mainstream data, but to show that their model is not correct, or their space travel is not correct, it doesn't fit the model. So you have all kinds of maps on the differences in porosity and density and the content of different elements. For instance, iron, aluminium, and titanium. Well, they're pretty common elements in minerals on Earth, the same thing. And very common, actually. So, you will find a lot of that. And you see a large variation already. Especially with iron. And then we have thorium, and a very high concentration in the basaltic area, and an extremely low concentration to almost zero in the areas outside of that, in the highlands, what they call it, the highlands, the whiter parts of the moon and the dark parts of the moon, that those are like the seas, that's why they call them the mares, right? That is basalt. They modeled it as basalt, and it makes sense. It's dark, right? And it's like flood basalts, like huge volcanic flowing basalts, right? Like the Deccan Traps and the Siberian Traps, and like huge provinces, or Namibia and Brazil, you have that. So people who don't believe that Africa and South America were once one continent, and I would like to know how it's possible you find the same rocks on either side of the Atlantic, by the way. That is these things you have on Earth as well. And these provinces, you find a lot of unique minerals. And if we look at the moon... it gets pretty strange, because we have four minerals that were found on the moon. Four. So-called new minerals.
I was about to ask you if it was for different mineral or for new mineral.
No, not for different, that would be crazy. No.
Yes, exactly.
You have that you pyroxene, olefin, quartz on the moon. Of course, you have everything there.
I had to ask because I was not sure I understand, and it made no sense.
Now, all the basic minerals of basalts and granites and all these kind of rocks, volcanic and magmatic rocks, you have there. No, but these are like so-called unique minerals. Tranquilite was found Apollo 11, and it's was also later also found on Earth. So it's not unique to the moon then. Then we have Armalcolite, that is named after Armstrong, Collins, and Boss, what is it? Edwin Aldrin, and so. And that is a very simple mineral. It's a magnesium iron titanium oxide. I mean, this is completely basic. There's no strange elements in there or so. And that mineral can be synthesized. It can be made synthetically. Then we have pyroxferroite, which is also an iron calcium silicate. It's a completely very normal mineral and can also be synthesized. And then we have another mineral, which is a little bit more complex, but still as calcium, sodium, aluminum, silicate. It's completely normal. Found at Apollo 14. So the only mineral that was not found in Apollo 11. So we have three minerals in 11, one in 14. And it can also be synthesized, yoshokaite. So we have four minerals. One of them is found on Earth. And the three others can be synthesized, can be made synthetic. So there is no unique mineral whatsoever that exists from the zero. Yes.
The moon is pretty boring on the geological perspective.
Yeah, that is indeed. That is very suspicious, right? Because if you think about it, this was 4.5 billion years, right? And now, if we look at the other missions where they found new minerals, the Luna 24 by the Russians, or the Soviets, in 1976, just took back 170 grams of rock and found one new mineral. So, yeah, it is amazing. I mean, the Soviets, they just need 170 grams for one mineral. And that's the thing I want to say. Apollo 12, Apollo 15, Apollo 16, and Apollo 17 together. So all the missions outside of 11 and 14.
Yes.
So four missions that landed in 13 completely...
Also.
No, yeah, 13 that didn't land, right? So
exactly.
They so-called landed in completely different terrains on the moon. Apollo 15 was in the Mara Basalt, that is what I made my model. But the other missions were in the highlands, and were completely, I mean, different ages, different histories, different rock types, everything different. But in 317.5 kilos of rock, not a single new mineral was found on the moon. And then we go to the Vesuvius, which is just one mountain. And here we are talking about they drove 55 miles or 90 kilometers, they drove on the lunar surface over the course of 70 hours. And that is then not even with Apollo 12 included. So in all that time, they gathered rocks and so on, 317.5 kilos. They brought it back to Earth, and not a single new mineral was found on the moon. And then we go to the Vesuvius. And the Vesuvius alone has provided, is the type locality, and the type locality means that it is the first place that specific mineral was described. It might be in rocks that were described earlier, but then that mineral was not described. But so it was the first place where it's described from. And it could mean that it also exists in other places, but it also can mean it only exists in the Vesuvius. And so the Vesuvius has 43 unique mineral or type locality minerals. 43. The minerals that are found, well, probably only there, but it could be also in other places, but at least they were unique there. So the moon should have provided millions of different new minerals, and not nothing in all the areas they went. That is the lesson from it, right?
Yes, it makes absolutely no sense that the biggest human adventure and discovery, there are no geological fruit. It's the first, I think. Each and every place that was discovered or visited by geologists was the siege of new discovery and everything, except for the moon, where not that much was discovered, and the few things that were discovered can be synthesized on Earth.
Yeah. That's the thing.
So there is absolutely no rocks type or elements that are native to the moon, that are endemic to the moon.
Well, not found indeed. Yes. So there's nothing that is moon unique. Yes, indeed. Yes. And the thing is, you don't need to be a geologist to understand that this is completely ridiculous.
Yes, because I am not, and I did understand that. So
yeah, you can break it down even. You go to a river where you have these different stones, and then on Earth you always find different colored stones and different types of stones in the river,
yes.
And then on the moon you just find everything you find on Earth as well. How is it possible?
It's
right?
Like to give you a comparison, if I can find one. It's like if you play 1 hour of a video game, and then you get the second one, but strangely enough, you already know to play everything, and everything is working fine, no surprise.
That is exactly, because it's a great comparison, because we are talking on Discord. Discord is invented for gamers. Gamers is a huge market for people who have at least a couple of possibilities to open their minds. And we have gamers around us, and the other, but the thing is, fucking
we interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hello, I'm Delcroix, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Yes, Delcroix. You are welcome back anytime you want.
Fucking lost my point of these fucking bumpers. Godverdomme.
Yes, you were saying that gamers are a big market and that they can be accessible to waking up.
Yes, thanks. The NASA success ratio. I mean, there is no gamer who could ever do that, even with kids, right? I mean,
The NASA efficiency is comparable to the Adam Lanza shooting skills.
Then, that is the thing, how they present it to us. They use one hoax to reinforce the other. Psyop chain programming, right? I mean, but look at Adam Lanza could... why not NASA?
Yes.
Right? And then
what I like about the moon topic is that's not really an hurtful topic. You know, no one will take it at heart and start calling you names because you are saying that the moon travel were fake. I don't think that people are so hardcore about the moon travel. As far as I know. I mean, try to say Sandy Hook was fake or deny the Holocaust.
Okay. No. This is a very sensitive thing for a lot of people. A lot of space fans out there who don't want to see their world collapse. Really. It is very big.
It's strange. Because if I were to think differently from someone, I will take 3 minutes to try to convince them and give it up altogether and go on with my life.
Of course. But, I mean, in the new coach, people are more, especially nowadays. It's not so pushed anymore. But the space travel, no, people take it personally. They really, they feel like, no, it's impossible. I mean, I talked to Alain Vuglet with my best friends, and they were like, what the fuck are you saying now? And, what, huh? And they were shocked. They were not. But they started having defense mechanisms were coming into play already with me, and they know me. And my views, nothing detailed.
That people are so attached, were so attached emotionally to the...
It's huge. No, it's space travel in general.
Yes, it's huge. Yes, of course. But I was thinking more of that in the sense that there is no victim. At least if you accept just Grissom.
But that is not... Victims is not interesting. I mean, I don't know why that became such a topic. That is only because of Fakeology 1.0. I don't know why, but most people don't care about these shootings and all this shit.
Since we are not speaking about the loss of life, I would have think that obviously I was wrong, that people were more emotionally attached to events where supposedly people, especially children, died. But it makes sense that since the moon hoax is something that we all grew up with, it's kind of at the basis of a system of thought. So to say, to start to think otherwise about that event, we'll start a chain reaction. I know that you don't really like that, but we'll start a chain reaction in your mind. You know, something that cannot be stopped. So maybe it's a defense mechanism to...
It is, yeah, of course, yeah. But no, yes. Come on, if you... People completely shut down and they... I mean, people don't care about these shootings. That is completely irrelevant. It's made only big because of fakeologists. That is nothing. People don't care about these people who died. The hysterical housewife Facebook comments are not representative for the world, people.
Yes.
Come on. Step out of this cocoon that is...
Yes,
online
and if people really cared about the loss of human life, Africa will be very different at this time.
Exactly. That's the thing. No, they don't care about it. It is a snippet that is in there in their mind and it's forgotten again. Oh, this.
Yes.
Now people get much more attached to space travel because it is something to wonder about. Look at all at. These people can go into space. That's also what I looked at as a kid. I want to become an astronaut.
Oh, yes,
at
we all do.
Point, of course.
That's yes, we all did at one point.
That programming is coming from somewhere. It is way... I mean, as a kid, you don't want to hear about shootings and bombs and all those. No, you want to hear about going to space. So, hearing that is not true is way more impactful than that some shooting or some beheading of James, what was it, in the ISIS is fake. I mean, that is not...
James Holmes.
...care about, yeah. No, that was the guy, Batman. No, that was the Batman
yes.
guy, James Holmes, right? No,
Yes.
James, yeah, the other one, yeah. Okay, but, you know, I mean, that is it's so unimportant. People attach themselves to the wonders of the space travel.
Yes. It makes sense.
And then,
that people choose to believe that.
On this cutting through the fog for him blog, I posted one comment, just very short. One guy says, I mean, this Jared Magnuson says that satellites have a detection mechanism so that they can steer their orbit, so they control their orbit, that they don't crash into another satellite. Huh?
Yes, why not?
What?
Why not?
Like we don't have that on cars that we have automatic braking. That's just testing phase thing. I mean, there are, and it's implemented in the more luxurious cars and all that. But there, it is still not, fallible, right? I mean, and then suddenly we have in the most extreme environments things floating around for decades that are not hit by micrometeorites whatsoever.
Yes.
And so on, and there's we're going at 27,000 kilometers an hour. There's satellite coming in 6 hours. So, yeah, then we have to adjust the orbit and we steer a bit here and we give a bit of gas. I don't know. There's no gas in space, but we just use the thruster somehow and then get to another orbit and then we avoid the collision. We have train crashes and bus crashes and car crashes every day. But in space, everything works like completely fluid. Yeah, of course.
And all those devices are made of material that we don't know of yet.
Mm.
Which is even better. Building something with something you don't know of yet.
Let's listen to the expert on this. Because we play the faulty version of the bot and then it works perfectly. let's see.
More than 300 feet tall, made of new metal alloys, some of which have not yet been invented.
Oh, excellent. Oh, wonderful. Yes, it's so great. It's like, I will encounter this issue. So I know what I'm going to do, but I don't know what I'm going to do. But I already know what I'm going to do. It's just that
welcome
I don't know what I...
Welcome to the hospital. We don't have any experience whatsoever, but we will assure you that we will cure you.
Yes.
We will find no ways to cure you magically. That's how we work.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So... we have no material that can sustain space travel, but believe me, we'll have them.
if this was clear, if this was the speech in 1961 or 1962, I don't know which version, which one it was exactly, but could be 1961. If he said that in 1961, there is no way that Gus Grissom in 1967, we had protested against it. Oh yeah, I question if this is possible. No, it was not possible from the beginning onwards, because space travel was not possible. Sputnik was fake. Gagarin was fake. Laika was fake. Everything, right? So it's not that it just suddenly appeared somewhere in the 60s or so, and that there's a moment where some things are real and then some things are fake. No, it's fake from the beginning. It's impossible. Physically, it's not possible. The force of the cosmos does not allow it. The force of the cosmos makes it such that everything stays on its planet. And if it doesn't, it crashes into another thing, right? Orbit or no orbit, there's no other possibility. There's no steering through space, adjusting orbits, going to other orbits. No, an orbit is a result of the force of the cosmos. If it's gravity or ether or magnetics or electromagnetics or puppeteers pulling strings, doesn't matter. It is a force of the cosmos, and we cannot fight that. We cannot overcome that. That is way stronger than we are, because it makes us stay on Earth and every species on any other planet by definition as well. So there is no aliens. It's impossible. We cannot go into space, so they cannot go into space. Doesn't depend. The thing is, it doesn't depend on how advanced something is. You cannot cross physical boundaries. Yeah, just a second. Yes. You cannot cross physical boundaries if by a technological advancement. You can, certain, of course, right? We are able to fly, but we are not able to do certain things, right? We are not able to fly physically, human beings, without any things. And there are so many limitations, and you cannot just choose to go to the moon and choose to invent the
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah.
If you say that you choose to go to the moon, you get an obligation to discover this new metal alloy that will help you to go to space. You get no choice. I mean, at the moment that you say we chose to go to the moon, it's like saying we are going to set some event in motion that will get us to the moon. That is true or not, it's irrelevant. It's just that you are announcing that the next news to come is we are in the moon, you know?
Yeah. No,
it's programming.
True. I mean, it is consistent in its psychopathy. So the second, you're right, the second remark logically follows on the we chose the moon idea. Indeed.
Yes.
It can only follow from it. So in that sense, it is internally logically consistent, but it is generally illogical, right? You cannot choose. Indeed. You say, I choose to go to climb Mount Everest. Nobody has done it ever before. Nobody knows how to deal with the altitude sickness and the oxygen. And then you have to say, so we are going to invent an oxygen tank. Otherwise, we cannot go there.
Yes,
that makes sense. Yes.
It's like what children will say, you know. Children will say to you, I am going to cross the river. You are going to say, do you know to swim? No, but I am going to make a bridge with wood. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah,
they come up with an answer.
Yes. It's a puzzle of reaction.
Creative mind.
Right? It's a puzzle of reaction. It's an NPC act. It's a non-processing behavior. It is. Well, as a kid, at least you have imagination and creativity, and you come up with at least it's some solution. It might be very funny. It might be actually very sharp. And if you would implement it, I mean, I really believe that engineers and so, by talking to their kids, got insights, and that became a discovery and so on, right? And so on and so on. Because that makes sense. Children are very sharp.
And they are less programmed to use certain pathway on their brain.
Yeah.
They can think out of the box, let's say. Mm-hmm. There is no box for them.
Yes.
It's more correct to say that.
I mean, the natural situation is that there is no box, because the box is created by the parents, ideally by the parents, but that's the problem, that it's not the parents. I mean, the parents have a very low effect on children, especially when they go to school, when they are that age.
Yes.
So that is, and for the all the time afterwards. Point.
Yes. For example, if you wanted to transform your children into a psychologist, best thing to do is to act like a normie in front of them, and they will do the opposite.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Because they, it is so easy for them to see that doesn't make sense. This normie point of view, mainstream point of view, the clown world. I mean, they naturally have that instinct because they know they come from. They are still unspoiled, or at least less spoiled than grown-ups, yes, of course.
Yes, but as I see it, the general population is like a woman that is beat by her husband. She knows that he's a liar, a piece of shit, and that he will treat her badly, but for some emotional attachment and the fact that they don't know how to do it without that person, they stay with the abusive individual. So I think that the general public is very aware, in a way, of what is happening. But yes, it's the beaten wife reflex. You don't know how to do anything. You don't see a life out of that system, so you stay with the abusive man or woman.
Beautiful. It's funny because I made this comparison. Great. It is. I made it with a pimp abusing a hooker. But then it was also about fascism, even more extreme. Yes. But same thing.
The pimp. Analogy is excellent because it's the same. I'm loving you, I'm taking care of you, but you don't just give me all your money.
It's the force, it's the threat, it's the fear, it's everything like that. It's the emotional attachment.
And yes, it's the way people that people think that they lead the system.
People are way more emotionally attached to these grand narratives than to a fucking baby hoax. That's why they are baby hoax. They are not important in the end. In the end, what is important is the grand narrative, the social programming, the long-term psyops. That is important. And the things they don't talk about, their hides, that is also important.
Yes.
Right? And that is the real, well, at least closer to the real history than, or real present than what they talk about. Want us to believe.
And the thing, yes, exactly. And the thing is that history is changing in front of our eyes. Just by the interpretation.
Can you explain it a bit more?
Yes. For example, they will add black characters to some BBC show about the history of the British Island.
Uh-huh.
For example, they will take a story like Thor, which is set in Asgard, and put a black character in the movie just because.
No, but we all know.
It's only for movie, but we can see that on a more larger perspective, I think. That the light that is shed on certain events is changing depending on the social climate.
Mm.
One great example I can give you is I've read this book by an American journalist named Jane Goodall.
Yeah.
And she traveled to Afghanistan in 1986 to visit those wonderful freedom fighters that were fighting the communist empire. And those men were so brave.
You have to realize
that they need, they need weapons, they need stinger, they need training, they need CIA money. Give them all this because, fuck, they're fighting communism and whatever. So those guys were seen as great people in 1986. Fast forward 25 years later, it's a different story.
Yeah, well, it's an exact copy of the Medellin and Cali cartel, right? Or the American mafia and so on.
Yes, for example, the story about the mobster Lucky Luciano facilitating the entry of U.S. troops in Sicily during World War II, for example.
Oh, interesting. Can you tell a bit more about that?
Yes, supposedly Lucky Luciano was detained in the USA. I don't know if it was to gain his freedom altogether or to ameliorate his jailing condition. But the fact is that he used his influence to help the American troop in Sicily, in, for example, ensuring that there was not that much stealing on the Palermo port that they were controlling. So the American mafia during World War II worked with the U.S. Army to ensure that the conquest of Sicily goes with as low trouble as possible.
Ah, okay.
And that is not a conspiracy theory or anything. It is something that is commonly admitted.
Uh-huh.
So the fact is, yes, each and every individual can be obligated to create some temporary alliance that in the eyes of the general public will not make that much sense.
Well, but if you do business, it is the same thing, right? If you, the higher up you go in business, the more dirtier it gets, mostly.
Yes.
But you also have to learn further business at lower levels and right?
Yes. One example I can give you also is that Google is financing different NGOs. Of course, Google is all about the climate change theory and everything, so they are mostly supporting organizations.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Once in a while, one of us wakes up. It's not supposed to happen, but it does.
That's right. The 20-minute mark was always the begging for money, but yes. I'm wrong.
So what I was saying is that Google is supporting financially different NGO, and I read something this week. They support an NGO that is for the withdrawal of the USA of the Rome Accord on Climate.
The Rome Accord. But Rome. Yes, but sorry, don't please have a glitch.
Okay, yes. So the Rome Accord on Climate is a general agreement signed by many industrialized countries to reduce the emission of CO2 on the next years.
When was that?
By taking drastic measures.
I know Kyoto, but Rome, when was it?
It was after Kyoto, I think. I'm not really
Kyoto,
sure, but I think it was during the presidency of Barack Obama, if I am correct. But I might be wrong, to be honest.
Okay, so yeah, but then late, because still followed Clinton and so before. Okay, I didn't know that. So, okay, interesting, the Rome Accord. So, wait, sorry, just not too fast. We went now from Kyoto, first we had Rio, then Kyoto, I think, and then
Rome.
Rome. Interesting. I mean, Kyoto was the capital of Japan, not Tokyo, but Kyoto. So that is interesting. Rome, Rome
the club
is
of
Rome. Yeah, Rome is literally the center point. All roads lead to Rome is definitely true, right? Yeah, the club of Rome. But what does the club of what is the club of Rome? I am not a member. Are you?
I wish.
You wish.
I wish. I will have some inside info to give you. I was at the meeting.
Do you need to speak Italian to be a member of the Club of Rome, or you can do it with other languages?
I think that they have members from each and every country in the world, as far as I know. I don't really think that they are reduced to speaking only Italian.
Okay, and what are they about? I mean, before I join the club, I would like to know what they're about.
It's mostly about keeping Earth alive. At least that's what they want to believe for as long as possible.
I'm all for keeping the Earth alive. I wouldn't be.
But at the detriment of human interest, let's say. For example, eat bugs.
In what sense? Eat bugs. Eaten bugs. I've eaten bugs. There's nothing wrong with eating bugs. When you come to Colombia, you will eat bugs. I'll assure you.
Yes.
You will eat bugs here. And it's perfectly fine to eat bugs. I'm not going to make my diet out of bugs because it's not so.
Depend which bugs.
Well, the bugs the bugs you get here in Colombia are.
I can eat maggots, for example. I think that it's a possibility, but you cannot make me eat a cockroach.
Mm-hmm. Same thing. Yeah, I am. No, I'm not a fan either. No. I hate bugs as well. No, but here, what you do, you have here the giant ass ants. And the giant ass ants, the Hormiga culona, literally giant ass ants, or actually, curvy ass ant or something. You can use it, translate it in different forms. They are common in Santander, and the capital of Santander is Bucaramanga.
So you are telling me that I'm going to eat ass in Colombia?
Yes, you are going to eat ass and ass in Colombia.
Also,
I've done,
ass.
what I've done with the Christmas dinner of my of the company I worked for, after the dinner, as a dessert, I put one fried ant with S, but the whole ant, for everyone as a dessert. It's actually not so much a dessert, but it's not sweet. It's like popcorn. It's really it's not bad at all. You're not going to buy a bag full of them and eat them like popcorn. Yes. But it's not bad at all. So
yes, let's make a mental note that if I ever get to Colombia, which will happen, we will make an episode called "Eating Ass in Colombia."
Yes, eating ass. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, okay, but caring for the Earth, a Club of Rome.
Yes.
Okay, but what are the plans? Are they behind Agenda 2030, or is it another club?
They are joining with different organizations. My point being that Google is supporting some organizations that want USA to leave this treaty altogether and stop reducing the emission of CO2.
The USA leave what? Sorry,
The Rome Treaty.
The Rome Treaty for a reduction of
CO2 emission. Yeah. So, people were asking why Google would support such an organization, but when at the same time they are claiming to be all about the climate change and everything. And the fact is that the organization that they give money to, that is against the Rome Treaty, is also a big proponent of internet freedom and privacy on the internet.
You say internet freedom, a la Vuclet. Sorry. An organization that is so-called representing us to fight for internet freedom. What is the name of this organization?
I don't know specifically the name of that NGO, but the thing is that it's a fight that is taken by the big companies such as Google, Amazon, or Facebook.
They are fighting for our internet freedom. Do you know how fucked up
that sounds? They are fighting for our right to freely access internet to consume their product.
Not just
for the freedom of it. They just want to have the biggest market share possible.
They are going into a village in Burkina Faso and get their network rolled out. It's Google or so, or Amazon or whatever.
Yes.
They
want to have access to as many consumers as possible.
This organization, this NGO, is against the Rome Treaty.
So the thing is that the answer of Google was that it's not because we give money to a certain organization that we are endorsing 100% the goal of said organization, which makes sense, to be honest.
But that same remark or comment doesn't work when their own daughter company, YouTube, has a video where there are remarks of people, then that suddenly doesn't apply. How does that work?
Yes, the thing is that they are not at one contradiction. No, it's not something that will bother them to have a double think or double speak or claiming to act one way and acting the other way when no one is looking. I think that is just cynical financial interest. If not culture creation and something that is planned in advance to make the public react a certain way.
But all I hear is reactive things. I think this is a perfect topic for a meme. And I would shout out to anyone to make memes. I make my own memes, which are different from any other meme. And you need more time to spend on these memes. Yeah, that is what you have to do then. But the typical short-term meme is made by many people well and make these memes. And about this mirror, these kind of things, this craziness, this twistedness that Google, when they do business, suddenly it's, well, we don't endorse 100% what they do, so we can completely do that. But there, if you produce a video on YouTube, then suddenly that doesn't apply.
Yes.
That mirror needs to get out to people, and a meme is a perfect way for doing that, and you need to find the right meme. So what I would say is a good idea would be that you have a meme contest, the best memes in a category.
Yes.
Get some memes, yeah, get
that
all
is something
memes
I
out.
Want to do.
So, yeah, please say, talk about it.
And the best meme will be my next avatar on Discord. We'll pick the best meme and make it my avatar.
Okay, that's nice, but of course, the idea of the best meme is not only to become your avatar, because it's nice for you and for the channel.
But it's just that we want to find a way to get the message across, more simple way. And as everyone can see, I tried to make a copious amount of meme, but I figure that my sense of humor might not be well accepted by each and everyone. So it might be better if someone that is has a less dark mind makes memes, you know, something that is more joyful or funny than anything I could
produce. I would say anyone, why would we beforehand, bad memes will filter themselves out, and good memes will also come. That's the thing. A contest is worked by itself, right? It's in the end, it's a free market situation where logic. When you have logical thinkers, that logically the best things will become most popular, right? That makes sense. But yeah, there. Just a collection of memes will never get that. So you need to get the filter of what is the best. Nobody will look at a box of candy. I mean, you want to be offered the best candy. Right? You don't need to look in a box of candy what is of your choice. There are moments you do that, and that is what you did last night. I think it's great to just do this meme generator and just put out stuff. I mean, otherwise we would have nothing to talk about. So it's great to do that. But that is not the only thing, of course. And the thing, there needs to be a plan behind it. Otherwise, it will be a waste of effort because it's not, especially if it's only on Discord, because it's already gone. It's hard to find things and so on. So it is good to make it in a contest type of thing or so. An app can maybe do it for you or whatever, right?
Yes, and I figure that we will probably set up a Fakopedia page for the best memes.
Yeah, and on the new Wikipedia, we can just import any images, so that's easy. And put them all on there. But, yeah, the thing is, I'm not going to do that, putting 200 memes or how many there are already on there, and it will only grow. No, it needs to be the best memes, otherwise it's a waste of time.
Yes, the best meme, and maybe we can sort them out by category
I think that would be great, John. Yeah, have certain categories. And then in those categories, you have winners. we want, as cheesy as making Oscars for the winners of the Fakeologist, Oscar in the shape of a wizard with a magic wand. Yeah, that would be nice.
Yes.
The winner can come to Colombia. I won't pay the ticket, but at least a night out here in Colombia, that is paid for the winner of the meme contest, if he or she dares to come to Colombia and see it firsthand and experience it here. Eat ass, for sure, yeah, and other things.
Yes. No donkey erotica. But eating us.
That is up to everybody's choosing, but I wasn't planning to go to the area where that is coming from. No.
The Vice documentary was.
If you really insist, I still will recommend you not to go to those kind of areas. You have to. Colombia is perfectly safe as long as you know where to go.
Yes. Yes, but it's almost similar in almost every city in the world. You can find one spot where you don't want to travel with a golden chain hanging out of your shirt, for example.
Walking in Buenos Aires, just I do that in a city in a different country as well. At night, mostly because I'm working then, I was walking in the city at night, just without a map, without a plan. I had a little bit of idea how the city works, but But yeah, I was just without goal. I love a glit walking through neighborhoods with prostitutes on the street and so, and it's, yeah, it's not really where you were normally would go, but everything was fine. Nothing happened. I mean, but yeah, you need to go. You need to know where to go. That is every show. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. This, all this imagery
except
of danger.
If you go to the moon, because every model was perfectly made, so you already know where you are going. It's an unknown place, but you already know where you are going.
Yeah,
you will not miss the Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly the thing. And then if you have 370.5 kilos over the course of 90 kilometers with the lunar rover, 70 hours on the moon, four different locations, no new mineral found, and on the Vesuvius alone you find 43. If you go to Tsumeb mine, one mine in Namibia, you have 71 minerals, unique, or at least type locality minerals. And it's pretty funny because one of the guys, one of the geologists who was involved in the Apollo program and selecting samples, that is what I think what they did. They were going around the Earth on different volcanic and igneous places and just took samples in a bank sense. It's mostly not meteorites. That is what people talk about. They go to Antarctica for meteorites.
Yes.
No, because most of these rocks are not meteorites. Most of these rocks they so-called found on the moon were not meteorites at all. So they were normal basaltic or granitic kind of rocks. So you'll find them on Earth, and that's the thing. And they dried them a bit to get the water a bit out, but still there was so much water in it, and it's just impossible to dry it all, especially with the big sample. You need days in an oven, and then even then there is still water in it because it's Gaia, it's nature, it's so strong.
Yes.
Water is everywhere in the Earth, so the whole crust
it's
is
not
water.
That it's a case of aphantasia, but the thing is that you can only imagine so much thing that exists. So if there is the reason why, for example, in almost all of the movies with alien, the alien are bipedal creatures that are semi-human-like.
Yeah.
You know? And if you want to take something that is very outlandish, you will, for example, film a special bug in close-up, modify the thing, and maybe it will look like an alien. But the human mind has its limitation.
I mean, and look at the alien, the movie Alien, right? It comes from this cockroach, this insect kind of origin. And probably, I don't know the real origins, probably it has been researched, but it might be that it was like a popular theory in science that they talked about bugs
and
it was taken as an, it's probably a book, right? Alien, I don't know who wrote it.
No, the creature Alien was created by Hans-Rudi Giger, which is a Swiss artist.
Oh,
so he created the alien creature. He has a wonderful museum near Fribourg in Switzerland, in Gruyère.
You have been there?
No, not yet. But it's something I intend to do. It's on my list. No, because I have a friend that did go there and he kind of oversell me the museum. It's like, there is this big chair and there is all these creatures. So I know for a fact that it's beautiful and it's something that is on my short list of trip to make with my fiance later on the year.
Okay, well, for one thing, I would say mention this on the fart. We didn't even talk about the alien movie on the list because this, I don't know, but I'm not an alien expert, but a Swiss artist, he came up with Alien. So when was that?
Yes.
With time?
I don't know. I think that it made this creature specifically for the movies. But the fact is that this guy was already an artist before and he allowed this dark concept and strange creatures. He also designed the creature for the movie Species 1 and 2, which the wonderful Natasha Henstridge, maybe the best, the most beautiful woman that ever lived.
Who?
Natasha Henstridge, the actress that was in Species 1 and 2, I think, also.
I think I may have seen Species once somewhere in my 98 or so, 97, I don't know.
Yes, I think so. 96, Species 1996.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, I don't
Not
know.
The best movie ever, but the creatures of the movie, the creature of the movie was designed by Hans Rudi Giger, which of course, when he designed the alien creature, gained a big fame and became this this regular collaborator of Hollywood studios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
you know,
his most iconic work is the alien creature.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know this.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support. In my
dream, I have donate 33,000 pesos to Garros, Garros, please. Yeah. 33,000.
Yes, yeah, so
more or less $9. I would say that's fair. Yeah. $9.11, more or less.
Yes. So Hans Rudi Giger died in 2014. They say on the Wikipedia that he's part of a team that designed the alien, but in Switzerland they are way more specific in saying that he designed the creature himself. So, in Switzerland, there are two themed bars that reflect his interior design, and his work is on permanent display at the H.R. Giger Museum at Gruyère.
Mm-hmm. Is it where the cheese comes from?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. If I ever go to that museum, I will probably come back with at least 2 kilograms of cheese.
Yeah, I like cheese, but I don't like the air. But that is personal.
Yes.
I would like
but
to
the
say
thing is that the Gruyère that you can find in shops is not really Gruyère.
No,
it's an adaptation of a popular recipe. I did find that out on not on boot camp, but on the later time on the army. One guy tell me, taste this, this is Gruyère. And I taste the cheese, and I'm like, this is not Gruyère. It's 10 times better than everything I ever eat. And it's like, this is Gruyère. This is exactly what was supposed to be sold on the shop. But for production reason and taste reason, it was altered.
I get you. Yes, yes. And now, and then, in that sense, I cannot say anything because I haven't tasted Gruyère. Yeah,
exactly.
I should be, yeah, that is the same.
It's like saying I don't like vodka, but I only taste the cheapest vodka.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What you have here, heavier queso holandés. Well, sorry. And then in some places, they have real Dutch cheese imported from Holland. But just the import is just destroying the taste because it's not the same. So that's the same.
Either it was frozen or transported on a too hot environment.
Yes, frozen is probably the thing. So and it first makes a stop in it goes Amsterdam, Sint Maarten, Saba, Sint Eustatius, is it Bonaire, Curaçao, Aruba, and then it comes to Colombia. So, and then it comes to all the way over the road. We are going to drive through the Chicamocha Canyon all the way to Bogota. So,
yeah.
This is how it goes. So it is, it is understandable. And that's the problem with Gruyère then as well. Okay, so, well, Gruyère, that is then on the list after or before CERN?
Oh, I think that it will be after, clearly. Because I'm trying to get Fliegenfurt to come to CERN with me, but you got to check if there's the possibility to visit, get the date together, but I want the CERN thing, I want to do it real quick, as fast as possible, if I can.
Yeah, okay, that's good. If you have the opportunity, do it. And report about
because
it.
Because after
and
that,
and
it will be more time to travel and less interest on the
time
on
to travel, that is funny, with CERN.
Yes. First you go to CERN and then you time travel.
Let's time travel a little bit back because I want to mention that this, back to the 1970s and 60s, Farouk Elbaz, you've never heard of him, he was probably a geologist who selected the samples for the lunar missions.
Okay, not to be an anti-Semitic pig, but isn't Elbaz a Jewish name?
I don't know. Elbaz, B-A-Z.
E-L-B-A-Z.
No, L, like normal.
L.
L. A-E-L. E-L.
Okay.
So Elbaz.
B-A-Z.
Yes.
In one word?
No, Elbaz, two words.
Elbaz, okay. Because in one word, there is a French actor that is Jewish named Vincent Elbaz. So if the name was in one,
word,
a possibility.
Well, that is a good, I think that's a great observation. That could very well be the case. This guy, after the where he worked on the Apollo program, because everybody talks about the American and so on, but this was an Egyptian geologist, he became the advisor for President Sadat. So that is not a position where everybody would go, I would say.
Yes.
You have to be pretty much Fudu people to get there. So he was the one of the leading geologists on the moon missions. So-called. And the first geologist they sent was not the first mission. No, it was the last mission.
Yes, and probably one of the only foreigners that was not German in the Apollo program.
Oh, yeah, indeed. But if he was Eskimo, then probably was they were all either Eskimo or Mason or both. But just like
yeah, so Farouk is clearly an Arabic name, but Elbaz, in one word, can be a Jewish name. Of course, the actor, that is not his real name, but he has a very distinct Jewish identity. So if he takes this last name, it's because he's Jewish.
Yeah, okay, of course, yes. Yeah. Oh, what is his real name?
I don't know. I don't know him under the name Vincent Elbaz. But just take 1 second to look at a picture of the guy and tell me he's not Jewish. You know, it's that simple in the end.
That's why we have the website Jew or No Jew. I've actually never visited it, but I heard that exists.
That it exists. Yes. Jew or No Jew. Yes. Why not?
I just ask IPS. If it's allowed to criticize, then it's not Jew.
Yes, in the end, that's it. Fuck Richard Jew.
Or maybe. Rick, I would like to know if it's allowed to criticize a Jew. Or if I have to reserve a special safe space for Jewish people because they have something Jewish or so, that is something special, and I need to respect it, especially over other people or groups talk about very freely. No, sorry.
I
will not make any.
Idea,
I will not discriminate because of someone's group, and that is what they want.
No.
But I am not going to do it.
Absolutely not.
There's no reason to do that.
Oh, no, but let's say the truth as it is. It's a distinct reality that a certain position of power, the Jewish community is overrepresented compared to the number they are in the world.
Yeah, and it's a very good... Just to finish off, because we're not recording too long today, but this is a good point because... There is only one group that has this exclusivity that you cannot criticize them. And whoever it was, if it was Voltaire or Rockwell, the American Nazi Party guy, or no, it was not Rockwell, it was another guy of this group, who came up with the quote, to know you who rules over you is the ones you cannot criticize. That is true, that mantra, because that is by law that is true. In many cases, that could be hoax and staged, but in some cases, that's also very real.
Yes. Oh, yes. And I start to see that the transsexual and the homosexual, the LGBTQIWZFX, whatever you want.
SPQR. SPQR.
SPQR community. Yes. Exactly. So the SPQR community is starting to be a protected community, a community that you cannot say much about those days. It starts.
Yeah.
It's not a full-on like for the Jewish community or whatever, but it starts slowly to build up. And let's be honest, on a certain level, not that it's... as obvious as it is for the Jewish community, but in Europe, on some certain level, you are not allowed to criticize the Muslim community anymore.
Oh?
I mean, they want to... Yes, they want to also have the Muslim community as a protector.
Hate speech. It is already a Pavlov dog. Hate speech. It's like an some kind of alien beast or so making a noise.
In the French world, I don't really know what it is for the English-speaking world, but for the French-speaking world, the world hate has started to take it.
Couple more times, because this is not working yet. No, please, hate. No, I'm serious. Yeah?
Hate.
Okay, yeah. Okay, sounds better. Yeah, good.
Yes, so this word, la haine, comme on le dit en français, hate, la haine.
Talking about
something
the movie.
That is, yes, it is something, 1994 movie about the uneasiness of urban youth in France, excellent. Ooh. But, to go back to my point, the word haine, or hate in English, is now used in many settings that have absolutely no bearing in reality.
Yeah.
For example, there was the spokesperson of the French government a few weeks back that made the claim that the opposition were haters. Haineux. Yeah. Les haineux.
Yeah.
This is the term she employed. She said, les haineux. Les haineux. So criticizing or being against
It sounds already like some Algerian immigrant in some neighborhood in Marseille saying it. And then also, then the retarded version of that, like some inbred nephew. Haineux. Like that, right?
Yes. Yes. So nowadays, criticizing the French government or just being in the political opposition make you a hater, or a haineux.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this was, when we grew up, that was like more or less reserved school kids, this kind of behavior.
Yes.
But now, under President Camacho, right? I mean, this is it. The people, what LSD33 said in the chat, I think it was him, said the New World Order is already there. Well, I would say there is no New World Order or Old World Order. There's just World Order that has been happening for ages. It's a condition that changes. It's not really. Of course.
It's from the Bible. Nothing new under the sun.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Rain in October, there's nothing new under the sun. Yeah.
Yes.
I think we covered. I think this. Shit, I didn't know about the alien stuff, and this is very interesting.
Take some note on Eicher Giger for research for a later show, or just for
you
the
share his name first. Because this name is complete. Catch it.
Hans Ruedi Giger. Yeah. So Hans Ruedi, you are familiar with, it's the Dutch name, but Giger.
What?
G-I-G-E-R.
If you put it in the live stream chat or show notes, then it appears for everyone who is listening, and they don't have to go and use the big G and feed them with clicks. That is the thing. If you have a direct link, then someone can click it. It's even better if we have it on Fakepedia, and maybe I find the time today to edit. But I would like to share a quote from someone, which was pretty interesting in this context.
If our intention had been merely to bring back a handful of soil and rocks from the lunar gravel pit and then forget the whole thing, we would certainly be history's biggest fools.
True that. Absolutely no follow-up on the scientific research that was conducted on the moon.
Exactly. Do you know who this said?
No.
Wow, the voice gave it away a bit.
German.
of course. Who is the only one? Who is the only one that could...
Werner von Braun, maybe?
Yeah, genau.
Okay, excellent. ich bin sicher it's Werner von Braun.
Yeah.
And that's the extent of my German. Don't really ask me for more. Sicher.
Keep talking, I guess.
Yes. So I don't really know much German. I can survive, if need be, in German. I can ask my direction. I can probably make a kebab made for me in German, but that's the extent of it. Don't ask me to develop a point or explain my idea.
Mm.
Yes. Because we do get German in school in Switzerland, but nobody gives a shit about that, to be honest. We only want for the hour to end and do something else. The big thing about German in English is that wo and there is totally different from who and where. So just making that out in your mind will take you a certain amount of time if you are used to speak English. In bootcamp, I made the mistake so much time, they corrected. Yeah. You know, I didn't have to say it right, they knew already.
The same thing in Dutch, because wie in German means how. But in Dutch, wie means who.
Yes. So, if you live in North America and you are lucky enough to have from thousands of kilometers only people speaking the same language as you, consider yourself
here, in South America and Latin America.
Yes, also.
Even more.
But let's be honest, there is some places in Venezuela where you will probably have a hard time understanding what they are saying.
No, not so much.
No?
Where it gets hard is Argentina and so on.
Okay.
If they are speaking Spanish, which most of the indigenous people do, then there's no problem. If they speak their indigenous language, there's no point. They don't any words. So you don't understand either, right?
Yes.
But the Spanish is pretty consistent. I mean, it's different, of course, different accents and so, but it's pretty consistent. It's not like a village in Scotland or so. Right? You wouldn't understand any. And so,
Irish.
Yeah, Irish, indeed, yeah. Or South Africa or somewhere. No, that in Spanish, in Latin American Spanish, it's much closer together. Cuba is pretty hard to get because they speak so fast and very unclear. And Venezuela, indeed, yeah, you're right. But most people do understand it. Argentina, yes,
there is one
harder.
There is one English dialect I still have a hard time with, but I am working on it. It's the Dave J. Speak too fast.
Yes?
Dave J. Speak too fast for me.
Okay.
I need to take some Dave J. lesson to get a better grasp of what he's saying to me.
Okay. Before the bumper, let's close off, and I would like to close off with a proper song. Just 2 seconds or 10 seconds, Gareth. Close off and. Memes
so
and Patreon.
Yes. So as far as I know, that has been Fakeologist Audio Chat 622. And it has been me, Garris, and Gaia, as always. Let's say a more freestyle chat, more relaxed. We did go over some topics of the moon, but I think that, it was more relaxed, and we did go in many directions. But it was very interesting, and I think that this episode was full of info, sound bites, and good things that you can grab. So, I will only encourage you to visit Fakeopedia, because many info on the moon travel are there. I mean, we spent so much time recording on it, and there is still so many things to be said and discovered.
Yeah, I do. Well, that's the thing. I will play the music today, but what I will do is compile a couple of links here for the page for this chat, and also please, Gary, we will talk a bit about the alien and because.
Yes. But that's, to be honest, that deserves more than just 5 minutes speaking on a different audio chat. This character deserves, you know. I might even see it as a field trip, you know, as an episode that is the following of a field trip.
Well, I think
that to really get the feel of what the guy was and what his work was, you really need to go to the museum. Especially when it's less than 150 kilometers away.
Yeah, no, okay, that's the thing. Before you come to the other well, and girls, let's have field trips. I'll have to find some field trips for myself to do, to find out. But yeah, you have the CERN field trip and the alien guy. I forget his name, I really... But, so that's why I put it in the live stream show notes.
Yes, it is on the live stream show notes, I think, or the live stream chat, one of the two. Hmm. Yes.
Hans Rudig. Hans Rudig. No, it's German first name, not Dutch.
Yes.
Hans Rudig. But
Hans Rudig. With an E. Not Rudy, but Ruedi.
Rudy.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hello, everybody. This is Soetic Luna. I'm from Florida, and you listen to
Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.
Quite a joyful bumper, let's say.
Gather round while I sing you of Werner von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Nazi schmatzi, says Werner von Braun. Don't say that he's hypocritical. Say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Werner von Braun. Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be one of gratitude, like the widows and cripples in old London town, who owe their large pensions to Werner von Braun. You too may be a big hero, once you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Werner von Braun.
That's all, folks.